Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Identifying Intuition, Personality vs. Individuality, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhiyada Velayada Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Good morning, everyone. Starting to develop the next keynote presentation for the next seminar in Malaysia, which is May 2010. We're planning to use it as the Malaysia release for the book that's coming out for Mahasamadhi this year, Mahasamadhi Souvenir, Gurudeva's Spiritual Visions, small book, number of visions in it. So for Malaysia, the first time it'll be formally presented is then, and so the idea is to tie Gurudeva's visions or intuitive experiences into a talk on intuitive experiences. And of course, one of the first things you have to say is, you know, you get into this up-down thing, I put Gurudeva on the pedestal and I'm down here and lowly and unworthy and flawed, and Gurudeva's up there and perfect, and we have to get over that one. That perfection is inside of each of us. Doesn't necessarily show, but it's there. And that the attainments of Gurudeva, the intuitive experiences, you know, we can have similar experiences if we pursue it in a serious way. Then also included, well, three phases of the mind always has to be explained in that context, instinctive, intellectual, and superconscious, three phases of the mind, so that you see the superconscious or intuitive mind in relationship to the other two. It's a very important teaching. And then, what I don't have developed yet, but I'll have to dig into Gurudeva's teachings, is to come up with some specific examples of how you can tap intuition. One of them I have in mind is just putting an idea into the mind, a question, something you're trying to solve, you just put it into the mind and let the sub-superconscious work on it for a few days and the answer should pop out. So I know Gurudeva explains that somewhere in the Master Course, so that's a good one, because quite often the time factor isn't what's understood. The sub-superconscious mind is there, but it's not immediate. Superconscious mind's immediate. After question and the answers, part of the question you asked, it's simultaneous, as Gurudeva would say, and at the same time. But for the sub-superconscious, it takes time. So you throw it down there, and the superconscious working through the subconscious sorts it out, but it can take a few days. Fortunately, some of the recent lessons in Merging with Shiva are about intuition, so I thought I'd read from them and make some comments. This is Merging with Shiva 194, a couple days ago. Intuition is the natural way in which man expresses himself on Earth or any other planet on which he might find expression of his being. Okay. This natural flow of mana, the Polynesian word for pranic shakti, from and through him only becomes inhibited when he disconnects from the nerve system of the celestial into the nerve system of the animal. When this occurs, there therefore is a disconnect between superconsciousness and external consciousness. Man's individual awareness is either captured by the nerve system of external consciousness of the successive animal bodies which his soul inhabits as a vehicle to live on earth in, or man's individual awareness is captured by his celestial nerve system, matured on aged planets in the galaxy prior to arrival here on Earth. This, then, is superconsciousness, the natural expression of the transcendental soul known as man. That's a pretty good one, isn't it? Intuition, day by day, occurs spasmodically, but it does occur. And systematically, one can gear his observation of his own intuitional faculties and find out exactly when these intuitive functions occur within him. It is a well-defined fact that we have the faculty of precognition of coming events. It is also concurrently known that feelings of fear may precede impending danger. It is for the individual to disentangle and sort out within his own daily experiential patterns which is which. In this way, he becomes knowledgeable in the great university of his own mind as to what is a daily intuitive occurrence and what is not. Gurudeva, of course, is pointing out that everyone has intuitive experiences, but they don't identify them as such. And then he's giving examples. Feelings of fear may precede impending danger. Example I use is a mother with children outside in the yard. She can sometimes sense that something's going to go wrong and go running out. Just senses it. That's an intuition. I mean, there's no logic involved. Nothing happened. But there's just this feeling. And the feeling is easier to identify when harm is a possibility, either to oneself or to one's family. Somehow it comes through more directly. You're driving on the road, the windy road, and all of a sudden you sense, maybe somebody's on my side of the road over there. You know? So you become a little cautious so that the danger, threat, can catalyze an intuition. Gurudeva continues, how does one distinguish between intuition and usual thought-feeling processes? Desires come through feeling, warmth of emotion, as do thoughts, schemes, ways of manipulating the media forces of one's own, for one's own personal benefit or that of a loved one. This is contrary to the power of intuition, which runs cold and is direct, like a bolt of lightning in the inner sky, or the subtle rainbow of an etheric aura which bypasses the processes of current thinking, giving answers before the question, and solving problems before they have accrued. Gurudeva's point is our normal thinking has emotion, warmth, whereas intuition is cold and direct. That's the way of distinguishing. Cold means impersonal, or a message from a computer. You know, it doesn't have the normal human warmth or feelings associated to it. It's as if the computer spoke to you, the universal computer, boom. Computer language. Gurudeva continues, it is only through sadhana and divesting oneself in order to perform sadhana from the social structure of the conglomerate of mortals that surround you. Gurudeva's having fun with this one. Huh? That you will actually be able to prudently delineate between true intuition and the imposing factors of need and greed that often seem paramount when living up to the externalities of the instinctive nerve system. Meaning, we get confused by what's going on around us. The people around us can confuse us and create extra noise in our mind, extra traffic in our mind, and that covers up our intuition. Therefore, it's important you know, to who our friends are, who our acquaintances are. We don't want to fill up the mind with a lot of unnecessary noise from people that aren't living a spiritual enough life. Here's a fine example of the use of intuition. You have often been in a situation in your own mind when you felt a subtle, direct impulse from deep within you as to how you should proceed. Most probably you denied it as fantasy and commenced in a logical way to fulfill your impulses and desires from previous patterns of experience, only to find that you would have traversed agonies and confusions had you followed the subtle impulse of direction which was rejected to enhance established patterns of procedure. But I might add that the first impulse must have registered itself as cold and clear, direct and profound. Only if it did would it have indelibly imprinted itself within your memory patterns, clear and sharp, thus distinguishing itself clearly from all warm emotional feelings that appear to be reasonable and totally in line with the current pictures of the day. Current events, most people guide their lives on prior reasonable patterns. Intuitive knowledge is only prophetic. It has absolutely no relation to the other courses of action entered into by intuitive decision, which in turn would encase man's individual awareness into the strong, dynamic, superconscious being that he ever was, is now, and always will be. Though we often use the terms unfolding intuitive faculties and developing intuition, they are only used in an effort to encourage the aspirant on the path to work within himself in subduing his intellect so that he can actually observe the already functioning totality of the intuitive area of the mind. Some of you may remember my usual example. I have to find a new example because radio stations are not that much listened to anymore. But the example is a radio is turned on in a room, but it's turned on very softly. But it's always on. Can you hear the radio? Probably not, because there's probably too much noise in the room and inside of you. That the quiet radio, which is on all the time, can't be heard. But we have to get rid of the noise inside ourselves, get rid of the thinking process, the disturbances. And initially, at least, be in a quiet place. We don't have to, once we've identified intuition, we don't have to be in an absolutely quiet place, but it's helpful in initially locating it to be in a quiet place. In order to subdue the intellect, the conglomerate of thought patterns and established modes of procedure according to the culture of the day, That means an M dash or something here. Okay. Okay, I see it. In order to subdue the intellect, which is that conglomerate of thought patterns and established modes of procedure according to the culture of the day, it is first quite necessary to inwardly observe how one's acquired intellect actually functions. Observation is a faculty of the intuitive area of the mind, and this particular aspect of observation that I've just described comes into usage only after regular periods of meditation have been maintained for a long period of time. The ability to watch the intellect rather than be the intellect. True, our intuitive faculties do constantly mingle through thought sequences each day, but our ability to distinguish one from another is accrued only through regulated discipline of our individual power of awareness. Once an inkling of success comes in knowing intuition and how it differs from reasoning, emotional impulses, and pre-programmed patterns within the subconscious, the contest is won. Then and only then we must persist to sustain this knowledge and dive deeper into the inevitable, all the time losing the future and past and loosening the reins of the intellect. So what does Gurudeva mean by losing the future and past? He means that quite often, our mind is dominated by thoughts of the past and thoughts of the future, which aren't that productive. We're burdened about the past. We're worried about the future. We're thinking about them a lot, but not in a productive way. Thinking about them really doesn't cause any benefit, doesn't cause a good decision to be made. We're just jumping there. We're jumping out of the present. So there's no need to jump out of the present unnecessarily in Gurudeva's teachings. If we're going to leave the present moment to go into the past or go into the future, we do so for a specific purpose. We just don't ramble there. The present is how we can be content. If we can stay in the present moment, we can be content. When we get pulled into the past and into the future, when we don't really need to go there, that we lose our contentment. And loosening the reins of the intellect, meaning modern education teaches us to solve problems only with the intellect. We don't use intuition at all. We learn to memorize and reason and therefore solve problems. And if what we're doing we can't logically analyze, we don't know how to solve it. Gurudev is saying that that's a limitation. We don't want to get rid of the intellect, but we want to also learn how to use our intuition as an additional faculty. So we don't have simply the intellect, but we also have an intuitive ability. Whenever I read observation, my mind always goes to the cognizant ability affirmation on that. Must be one of the first things I studied or something. Just boom, observation. So that reads, observation is the first faculty of the awakening of the superconscious regions. This observation is cultivated by, anyone remember? Yes, abstinence from excessive talk. Exactly. As Gurudeva says, this aphorism is self-explanatory. For we can plainly see that in recognizing the fact that we have created our surroundings and everything that happens to us by our thoughts and desires of the past, it takes the observation of our creations to bring us to the point where we can reconcile them with the thoughts and desires that created them. It's very hard to admit that we created the mess we're in, right? It's easier to point to somebody else, say it's your fault, or at least half your fault. It's easy to take credit when things are going well, but it's really hard to admit when they're not that we created that too. But the point is, we gain the ability to understand better cause and effect. That's what Gurudev is saying. What we do and what we think is creating the future. So learn by what you're experiencing now and understand how what you thought and did in the past created it. Therefore, we can create a more refined future by understanding that process. And, of course, we have to use observation. Gurudeva goes on to explain the problem of excessive talk. He says, excessive talk overloads the subconscious mind, thus making it extremely difficult for the superconscious to express itself. This is an easy one to grasp the analogy here. You know what it is to have a basement full of things you have no use for. These days it's a garage, right? Don't have many basements anymore. The basement may easily be compared to your subconscious mind. Thoughts and words can be compared to things. In your basement, you have a furnace that supplies heat to the entire house. Your furnace can be compared to your superconscious mind. If your basement is too congested, you may not be able to get to the furnace to light it and heat your home. So it is within the storehouse of your subconscious. Silence lends itself to understanding. It allows you to perceive, then cognize. For is it not true that we talk excessively in our effort to understand what we are talking about? That's a good one. Said another way, takes time for the subconscious mind to process what goes into it. And if we're overloading it with excessive talk, then it doesn't clear itself. It's congested. We're putting too many things into it in too short a period. Therefore, you want enough silence to process what's already gone into the mind without adding more things. Okay, well, thank you very much. We'll share some more when it gets further developed. It has to go on hold for a while here to get ready for going to Australia in November. We have to get those presentations ready. But I think this will be nice. You'll enjoy the book. It's Be Here for Maha Samadhi, printed in Malaysia. And I'll definitely share the specific suggestions. I think that's valuable. Specific suggestions how we can tap the superconscious. Wonderful day. This is far from true. In classical yoga teachings, we look at individuality as being the actinic energy, or the clear white light, the pure energy substance of the mind, which is constant, ever unfolding itself, peaceful and controlled. The personality we consider as the various masks or persona which cover the individuality. The persona which are heavy, dark, and glued onto one's face, so to speak, are those of an intense ego, congested otic force. They are most difficult and rather painful to drop off or even to pull off. The persona which are transparent allow the clear white light from the actinic being to shine through. One can have many of these personalities and have fun using them constructively in the world, doing things of the world, always recognizing that the clearness of actinic vision shines through the mind-constructed personality of the individual's race, occupation, social background, and various accomplishments. Personality is often emphasized. I remember speaking to Western woman from Quebec came and was thinking of going on our inner search program, almost did go on the inner search program, involved in a number of teachings, mostly New Age teachings, and she was very proud to know something about her past lives, kind of sharing that information. Oh, I know something about my past lives and this, and this. You know, and here I was thinking about this, you know, having a personality identification for one life is challenging enough, you know. When you remember them for multiple lives, you know, it's kind of going the wrong direction from Gurudeva's point of view. So it pointed out a distinct difference in, you know, the New Age, which is not really new, you know, interest in past lives is, I've been around for a long time. We'll just say the metaphysical interest in past lives, who I was in a past life and what I did in a past life, and isn't that great to know that? Plus my current life and maybe what I'll be in a future life. All the emphasis on the outer personality versus the individuality, the pure awareness inside us. So it's a very different emphasis that Gurudev is giving. Many people become attached to their personality and suffer when it changes. One cannot, however, be attached to his individuality. In identifying the difference between personality and individuality, we can say that man's individuality is the actinic, superconscious mind, which is constant, permanent, ever unfolding and secure, and deep within at a more intense rate of vibration than his otic consciousness and subconscious mind, which make up the ever-changing personality. It is conceivable that man can have many different personalities, but he can have only one constant unfolding individuality. And so it is the ego or personality masks we must identify as being the unreal and impermanent, and the actinic individuality as being the permanent, secure, ever-unfolding and refined actinic phase of the mind. This week, do an internal concentration on the words personality and individuality. Try to locate your individuality by identifying your several masks or personalities that you have created in this life, and write your findings on why you can get attached to personality but cannot get attached to individuality. We were doing this on the India Inner Search, and so I gave this exercise. We don't have time for an exercise, but you can see what I gave. Think about your personality of the present versus your personality when you were about 10 years old. Okay, you're a very different person when you were 10 years old, right? Identify major changes between your personality at that time versus the present. The part of you that is not changed is your awareness, your individuality, or your individual awareness. So the idea is, when you look at yourself in the past, we tend to look at our outer personality and see how much we've changed. But if we look inside, there's part of us that is the same. So if we look at that part of us which is the same, then we're looking at our individuality or our actinic energy. Thinking on this and related it to one of Gurudeva's key Mahavakya, God is the life of our life. It's the first sloka of Dancing with Shiva, so that shows it's important, right? I put it first. God is the life of our life. So unfortunately in English we have many words and they all mean the same thing, but we get confused because they appear to be different. So the idea is when Gurudeva refers to actinic energy or individuality, which is what we were talking about, it's the same thing as life. Life means actinic energy. So when we say the life, we're saying the actinic energy or the individuality. It's just different words or the same thing. When we say the life of our life, we're looking for the life that makes everything else work. In other words, obviously the body has life, but when we pass on, it doesn't. So something else is giving life to the body, which is the soul. And even in the subtle world, the astral world, there's a body, but we drop that off. So the soul is giving life to that life. So the soul is the life that's giving life to everything else. It's the idea. In modern terms, I was thinking of electricity. You take electricity, you could run all kinds of different machines with the same electricity. You could choose to run a computer, run a television, run a kitchen appliance. But it's that energy that you're using to run the different machines is the life of life, the life that gives life to the machine. The machine works because of electricity. Electricity runs through different machines and makes it work. So it's similar to the life of life. The electricity gives life to the machine. Likewise, the soul is giving life to us. So Gurudeva says in Sloka 1, we are mortal souls living and growing in the great school of earthly experience in which we have lived many lives.
Vedic rishis have given us courage by uttering the simple truth, God is the life of our life. A great sage carried it further by saying, there is one thing God cannot do. God cannot separate himself from us. This is because God is our life. God is the life in the birds. God is the life in the fish. God is the life in the animals. Becoming aware of this life energy in all that lives is becoming aware of God's loving presence within us. We are the undying consciousness and energy flowing through all things. Deep inside, we are perfect this very moment, and we have only to discover and live up to this perfection to be whole. Our energy and God's energy are the same, ever coming out of the void. We are all beautiful children of God. Each day we should try to see the life energy in trees, birds, animals, and people. When we do, we are seeing God's Shiva in action. The Vedas affirm, he who knows God as the life of life, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, he indeed comprehends fully the cause of all causes. So that's a beautiful verse, and it's, you know, the idea of the eye of the eye, for example, is that which makes the eye work. So it's life. That which makes the eye work, that which makes the mind work is life. Taking a different switch on the words, so far we've talked about individuality, actinic energy, and life. And we're saying there are three different phrases or three different words for the same concept. I'm going to add two more. Gurudeva says, energy, awareness, and willpower are one and the same. Remember that? And now we're up to five because we've added awareness and willpower. We have five different English words or phrases that mean exactly, refer exactly to the same thing in Gurudeva's teachings. So I wanted to relate individuality to awareness. And awareness, as we know, is a very key concept in the Shum language, awareness, which is just another word for actinic energy. There's a nice exercise. I haven't created the meditation for it, but I thought it would be a great meditation. I'll read this and then I'll explain the meditation. I have to find the Shum words to do it. The seventh dimension is clear inner space, not clear white light, just clear space. Whereas in the sixth dimension, one experiences an intensity of inner light that glows in every cell of the body, through the torso, the hands, legs, and feet. In the seventh dimension, he comes into pure inner space, seeing within himself a vast space that goes on and on and on, like an infinite inner sky. But he was pointing out that inner light is not the deepest experience. In many places, he explains that inner light is the friction between actinic energy and odic energy. It creates a friction. Sparks, rubbing two things together, actinic energy is hitting odic energy. And when that happens, you have light. But the actinic energy itself doesn't appear as light, it appears as clear inner space. When deeply immersed in the seventh dimension would be aware of being aware without an awareness of light. In a sense, he would be above the vibratory rate of light, and with no thing to be aware of, awareness becomes conscious of itself. In other words, when the inner vibration gets high enough, there's nothing else there. So awareness has no choice but to be only aware of itself. There's nothing else there. This is the meditation. Awareness can expand into the endless inner space of the seventh dimension or contract into being completely aware of itself. Kaif. So wouldn't that be a great meditation? You go out and then you come back in. Go out and you come back in. Exploring the two different perspectives on the seventh dimension. Experience of Kaif is simple. Our concepts about it are the biggest barrier. We often feel that pure consciousness must be earned by a saintly life, and we generally know our life well enough to disqualify ourselves. A little humor there. However, anyone can experience kaif, awareness aware of itself, for brief interludes. Therefore, although kaif is itself easy to attain, it is indeed difficult to sustain for longer periods, and even more difficult to dissolve into im kaif, self-realization. Gurudev is trying to take away the barrier that we sometimes put up. I'm not ready to experience this. I'm not worthy to experience this. He's taking it away and saying it's easy to experience. Anyone can experience pure awareness aware of itself. It's just that it takes practice or adjustments to sustain it, because we're pulled out by the contents of our subconscious and conscious mind. Pull us out of it quickly, so we can't sustain it. One last tip. Gurudev says, it is good to locate the dimensions and distinguish them from the chakras. The chakras is the power of awareness within the dimension itself. Look at each dimension through the area of the body where the chakra exists. For instance, when in Shumi, in the fourth dimension, try to look at the world through the chest. When in the seventh dimension, try to look at the inner world through the top of the head. When in the fifth dimension, try to look out through the throat area. This is best done, of course, through Shumnam, meditation. You will find that each chakra relates directly to the third eye, and the third eye focuses through the chakra. Gurudeva goes on to say, just as you can see through your fingers, you can feel things, it's the same way through the chakras. That's the idea, that looking at individuality versus personality and looking at it from all these different points of view as the part of us that doesn't change versus the part of us that does, as actinic energy, as life of life, as awareness, and as willpower. Thank you very much.